Oh, that's really funny, Peter. That's a good joke. Bob Martin, pause.
Yeah. Third degree net podcast.
Well, hello there, DFW area soccer curious person. You welcome to another episode of Third Degree, the podcast. This one is 320. So there you go. There he is, back from whatever he was doing last week, which was very mysterious, very undercover, very hush-hush. It is Dan Crook. Howdy, Dan.
I was watching Megan 2.0.
See, why did you give it up?
Because there's nothing mysterious about
that.
Is Megan
2.0 any good?
It was really cool, actually. It was one of those rare times that a sequel wasn't total dog shit.
Did you like the first Megan movie?
I did, and they actually lent into some of the stupidity of the first one and like the negative reactions towards some of the stupidity of it. So
I'm going to guess there's an opening for a Megan 3.0?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, excellent. So how many thumbs up do you give Megan 2.0?
Well, I only have 2.0 thumbs, so 2.0 thumbs.
All right, there's you a Dan Crook movie review. His favorite hit of the year, Megan 2.0.
I wouldn't say that. It was just fun.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, fun movies are fun. Your hero, my hero, everybody's hero, editor, founder of ThirdDegree.net, and the original soccer influencer himself. Here he is, Buzz Carrick. Welcome, Buzz.
Peter, I'm so pleased to learn today that this podcast ranks below Megan 2.0 on Ben Crook's scale of importance.
I also hadn't seen the game before, so it's kind of a waste of time me being there. I could have talked about the Texoma game, and that was really it.
Yeah.
Dan was busy watching a doll kick the shit out of people.
Yeah.
I actually kicked shit out of another doll.
Yeah.
Oh, doll on doll violence?
Yeah, 2.0, yeah. Peter. Two dolls.
Is there like a Ken 2.0 that she beats up in the movie?
I don't remember what the other one was called.
If it was Chucky, I might have been in for it.
Now, Chucky, that would be cool. Chucky and Leprechaun,
Chucky
maybe.
Chucky versus Megan, yeah.
God, awesome. You can tell the suck is terrible, and this is
yeah, yeah, that's how we
fair. Yeah.
You know, I feel like our job at Third Degree is to moderate the level of ups and downs of the curious when it comes to Football Club Dallas. Like when it gets too high, we got to stamp that down a little bit. We got to tamp down the overexcitement. And when yep. they're really, really low, I feel like it's our job to pick people back up. Because no matter how bad it feels like, it's never really as bad. I don't know. Maybe it is that bad, Buzz. I don't. They go to L.A. They lose comprehensively at LAFC 2-0. Nothing looks good. And by the looks of your Discord over the course of the last 48 hours, you would think this club is about to just go out of business flat out all the way around based on how the mood and attitude and the level of just digging into how bad it is going on in your Discord has hit kind of some new lows, Buzz.
Yeah, to be fair, I think if you look at the product that was on display this weekend against LAFC, you would be unsurprised to find that those lows were being felt by people. You know, on the other side of the coin, you have to remember that their best defender, Sazé Urigide, was not playing. Their DP10, Lucho Casa, doesn't start. That causes all kinds of kerfuffles up front. You know, they got Ramiro coming off of an injury. He's back to starting. So, like, you know, like this team is just as bad as it was. I think the trouble was that, for me, I watched this game, and for the first 15 minutes, I was just sitting there thinking about the starting 11 from this game. And I was thinking to myself, is there a single player in the Dallas 11 that would start for LAFC? And even Martin Paz, who had an excellent game, was terrific. I don't know that if he starts over Loris. Loris has got a huge resume. The only one that can come up. Yeah.
That is Loris, sir.
Loris, I'm sorry. I'm not French.
Wow.
The only one I could come up with was I think Petr Musa would start over the homegrown nine that they have, Ordaz, who's a nice young player, don't get me wrong, but I think Petr Musa would start over him. So that would be the only one that I could come up with. I don't think any other guy in the Dallas 11 would start for the other team. And so, but this is not first place best in the league LAFC. This is sixth place LAFC. Now they're coming off of some champion cups and all these other distractions and some injuries and various things like that. But nonetheless, like, you're comprehensively outmanned across the board in this particular game because you're missing two or three of your very best players. It wouldn't be as bad, of course, if you had some of those guys back, but you didn't. And so they just got, at no point were they anywhere even in the game. It was just, it was, the whole game was just try to not get destroyed, you know, and the fact that Martin Paz had a really nice game, he probably kept them from getting destroyed.
By saying that, I get the sense that you feel like in other games, there would be Dallas players that would be another team starter. I can't generally say that you could go game by game and say Dallas would have. I mean, Musa probably starts for a lot of teams in MLS and maybe even Paz.
But not all. Yeah.
But who else in this team would start for pretty much any other MLS team in the league? And if you tell me Lucho Acosta, I'm saying 2025 Lucho Acosta has been pretty poor.
Sure, but there's probably, you know, a third of the teams in the league that he would still get on the field for, you know.
Based on reputation or based on current form?
Reputation, mostly, and okay. Probably what you would see in training. But, you know, there are teams worse than Dallas in the standings, right?
The couple,
yeah.
St. Louis,
LA Galaxy, like Kansas City up until very recently. Like, I'm just saying that, like, and Osasuna Iragide, I think, would start for quite a few teams in this league.
Okay. You know? Fair.
And that, you know, and they have some other guys that, like, if they were in certain teams, I think might get looks. You know, there are other bad teams in this league. You know, it's not worth going through every single team in the league and saying, like, oh, this guy would be on that team. This guy would be on that team. But, you know, there would be people that would be interested in Logan Farrington. There'd be people that would be interested in Shaq Moore. I think Anderson Julio would probably start for a lot of teams. You know, again, he's not going to start for LAFC. He, not that he was playing, but if he had, he's not going to get out on their field in front of Buaga. I mean, you know, Buanga, excuse me, I can say that correctly, but, you know.
This is actually really interesting, Buzz, because, you know, you went through and you just named several guys that you think could start for other MLS teams. So why is it Dallas is so bad? If they actually have a small group of guys that could, in theory, individually play a start for other teams in this league, why? I just want to point something out. Somebody tweeted out the guy, Sounder by Heart guy, mm-hmm. Jeremiah, tweeted out that I guess the beginning of April is when the Sounders went from being really bad to kind of going on an upturn for their season.
Right.
Somewhere at the beginning of April. And he happened to say, they've collected the second most points in the league since that time and their record. And so I went back and looked. In that same amount of time, Dallas has collected the second lowest number of points in the league.
Yeah, well,
since the beginning of April.
You know, a lot of this particularly bad Dallas play coincides with Iragide being out. I mean, look, the dude is a Band-Aid. He helps a lot in the back. But the bottom line is that FC Dallas is talent deficient compared to these much better teams in the league. You know, they just don't have enough. They have three or four guys that would be in competition to other teams that are legit. Like, this is an MLS starter grade player, you know, or even maybe slightly better than an average starter grade player. But then they just have five or six guys that shouldn't be starting, that they should be backup pieces, or they should be like, look at the two center backs that started this last game. Neither one of those guys has a business being a starter in MLS at this point. They're journeyman veteran backups. Shaq Moore hasn't been playing like a starter. Marco Farfan hasn't been playing like a starter. Ramiro Caic, neither one of those guys has been playing like they deserve to be a starter. Maybe Sebastian Legette does. He does about 80% of the time. He looks like a guy who's legitimately competing in MLS and is capable of being at that level of play. Paxton is if he's not healthy, but I mean, who knows if we'll ever see that guy again officially. Not unofficially, I'm worried. Officially, he's still on the team. You know, so other than Musa, other than Logan and Anderson Julio, and you know, that's about it. You have five or six guys that are legitimately first line MLS players, and then you have a bunch of guys that aren't. And until you have a whole 11 and maybe even past that of guys that can compete to be real legitimate starters, you're not going to compete in the top half of this league.
So is there a story behind Lucho Acosta not starting this game? Is it a rest thing?
It's not rest. He was according to my information, he was dropped for an over excessive amount of tardiness of late. And may have actually been stripped of his captaincy. So,
whoa.
Yeah, that one I'm less sure about the captaincy thing, but that is a thing that's floating around out there. I'm more sure about the being dropped for the tardiness thing for sure being a thing. You know, not in the doghouse enough that he didn't still get into the game, but you know, I knew earlier that day he wasn't going to start, and that's the reason why. So this is definitely not just we're resting him. And I think if you listen to the broadcast, you could hear in the commentators of them saying, like, oh, maybe it's not right rest. Like, they were hinting around that there's something else going on, and that's the something else going on. And I think you can look at I think you can't help but question, I cannot help but question, that Acosta maybe instigated a little bit into getting himself a yellow card so that they would now not have him for the San Jose game. And I can't help but wonder if this is sort of going to be a tipping point one way or another. We know that Acosta has worn out his welcome other places. Has he reached a point already where that's beginning to happen? I don't think you can. How can you not question that?
Well, no. I mean, yes, he absolutely has that track record. But to be doing it halfway through your first season with a club would be unbelievably embarrassing.
It would be. But this wasn't a rest and rotation drop. This was a drop for cause. You know, off-field cause, because, you know, the thing that led me to believe that there's a way back from it was that Quill stuck with the same tactic. Like, if he really was like, oh, well, Cross is done here, he would change the formation, because there would be other things that would work better. Because, like, they play this way because of Acosta, and perhaps partially a little bit because of Romero, but mostly because of Acosta. So the fact that he stuck with that shape leads me to think that he was planning to bring him back for the San Jose game. And then here we go with Acosta getting that yippy little yellow card over in the corner. And granted, the ref was a little bit quick to pull it, but if you're on the verge of a game suspension for yellow card, why would you not be zipping your mouth and walking away from the ref every time you had a chance to try and get through the game on good graces, rather than getting over there and getting involved in stuff and getting that yellow card and being like, oh, sorry guys. You know how players are at that level. Sometimes there are guys that will orchestrate cards and orchestrate suspensions to prove a point. I'll go back to Retto Ziegler when he told the world he got COVID exposed and didn't let the team handle that, and just to prove a point that took him out of the game, and he was trying to prove a point that, like, look how bad you are without me. And of course the team never played him again, so, and he was gone shortly after, but you know, it happens. So
is that on the list?
Oh, I'm sure it's on the list. I mean, it better be on the list.
I don't think that is on the list. I think we're missing that one.
Well, that's a huge oversight on who
we need to review that. And if it's not, it needs to be submitted for consideration.
Well, you remember the story. He was trying to prove a point that,
oh, I know that. I remember the story.
Because he wanted a new contract and he wasn't getting it. And he was like, oh, you think Brisson is better than me. Watch this. And so, oh, world, hello.
I got exposed to COVID. So now you can't.
Yeah. So, okay. Sit over there for a bit. And there were like, what, six games left or something in the season? And he never – so my memory is he never played again. So, yeah, that should be on the list.
Dan, did you go see Superman this weekend instead of watch the game?
Nah, I couldn't care less about that.
It's a great movie, man.
I got to be honest. I was out all day. I got home in time, actually, 5 minutes after kickoff. That game was bad enough that I just zoned out, and the bits that I was like totally coherent for, I was like, I am not going back to watch the rest of this. This is terrible.
Yeah, it is weird, Buzz, and I do think there's a continuation of the conversation we were having last week about Eric Quill's culpability in all of this. I know a lot of people love to focus on Zanata and the front office and how badly this roster is constructed. And I don't disagree. I mean, I think all of that is, you know, so predictably bad. And we've been talking about this all season. We were worried about it before the season, watching this team play without Acosta, when they have Acosta, isn't very good. But it looked a lot like the team that I thought this team would look like before they signed Acosta. Because remember, we were all talking wooden spoon stuff back before the Acosta thing. And that's what 100%. This team looked like mostly during the LAFC game. And I don't know, man. There's something about this team's inability to do some basic stuff when they have the ball that I can't just simply chalk up to the quality of the roster and not try to apply it to how this team is being managed and led on the field by Quill. And I just, I'm really concerned about, is it, I do wonder if this job is bigger than him.
I don't know. I will say that there's not really much defending can be done of what's happened so far in terms of him and the job. You know, I advocated that he would be a good hire. I think of the pool, we've said this many times before, other people that will take this job,
sure,
of the pool of candidates, I think he was still a pretty good choice. But I can't point at anything and say, like, look at what he's doing that makes you think there's excitement ahead. I didn't think the resiliency at the beginning of the year when they were able to get points on the road was showed some leadership qualities in the fact that people were sort of rallying around him, his team was. But that hasn't continued. And the fact that he couldn't do that kind of thing at home, those raise serious questions. You know, I think that he's got such a shorthanded roster that he doesn't have very many choices to make. You know, like later when we talk about the next game, we'll go through the lineup and there really isn't like a lot of real contention happening. But on the other hand, like, you know, he could be embracing the play of the kids, you know, he could be trying other things perhaps, you know.
Yeah, but if he does that, Buzz, he's essentially just giving up on the season.
He is. And I think that, like, given the money they spent on Acosta, he pretty much was forced into trying to make it work with him as much as possible. You know, you got a striker you paid $10 million for. You got a playmaker you paid $5 million for. You got this new center back that looks really nice. You know, there were Anderson Huda looked like a nice addition. You know, like they should have been able to take, I thought, a step forward over last season, and they haven't. You know, and whether it's Quill's fault or whether it's there are other things going wrong that he hasn't solved or whatever, you know, you can't. I don't think you can defend, like, well, look at what a great job he's doing. And like, if tomorrow this podcast drops and an hour later it turns out he's fired, it'll be like, you know what? I'm not surprised. But at the same time, if they hold on to him all year because he's in the first year of a deal or whatever, that won't surprise me either. So like, I'm not going to certainly advocate for the guy to be dismissed, but I can't say that, like, oh, look at all these amazing things he's doing, because I don't think you can claim that either.
Where do you fall in the spectrum of whose fault it is, Dano?
It's a very sharing, caring situation, isn't it? I think the team's expected several coaches in a row to work miracles with not a whole lot. And several coaches in a row have not worked miracles. In any one case, FC Dallas kind of fell on its luck with Oscar Pereira, hoped to repeat the magic, but I don't know. Do I see things that Quill does that, you know, even if he had the ideal situation in the roster, wouldn't be optimal? Sure. Has he had that opportunity, though? No, it becomes a little bit difficult. I just think that there's a lot of areas in that team that need changing. Hiring a first-year coach doesn't necessarily fix them. Zanata is untouchable. I think you've got a performance staff that allowed Paxton Pomacol and Asazi Arigide to be heavily overused and injured as a result. That's that for me feels like a pretty unforgivable thing that actually could be changed realistically. So yeah, where to begin doesn't necessarily start or end with Quill.
So how do we square the Dallas situation with, like, San Diego, an expansion team that hired a guy that had never coached a professional team before, and Mikey Veras, who, by the way, was on your staff two coaches ago, and now they're sitting atop the table and playing some really interesting and fun to watch football? What is the difference between those two situations?
They support him.
Well, one of the biggest differences is that FC Dallas didn't hit on all their DPs this time. Like, San Diego's DP, their main one, is phenomenal, and they've done some really good work with their roster. FC Dallas tried to swing at Lucio Acosta, and it hasn't worked. It's like, it's not working with the coach. It's not working on the field. It's not working with Petter Musa. You know, he's got one assist, I think it is. So, like, you know, you've got to get those signings right. You know, will they be able to admit perhaps that they've made a mistake? Do they think that the mistake is in a different place than Acosta? Do they think that the mistake's in the coach? Do they even see a mistake? You know, I don't know what to tell you other than, like, they're short of DP. They only have two instead of three because they went with the four U-22 models, and they have a horrific record on U-22 signings, and none of them have panned out. The most panned out one is Patterson Delgado, which is not exactly a home run, right? Giovanni showed a little bit of signs of something before he blew out the same ESL twice. You know, you just cannot perform and compete in this league without taking advantage of all the roster mechanics to their fullest extent, and they have not done that. And you can look at any team that's doing really well that does do that. Miami does that. San Diego clearly has done that. Generally speaking, Seattle does that really well. You know, these are teams that get those mechanics right. And if you don't get them right, you're going to stink. And Dallas has missed on Acosta for whatever reason. Whoever's fault, you want to blame it on. We all thought it seemed like a good idea. I'm not going to claim that we all told everybody was stupid because it seemed like a good idea, but it hasn't worked. So admit you made a mistake and fix it one way or the other. Do something, change it. Don't just wallow in. What's he got, like a 3-year deal now? I mean, like, you're just going to ride this out, like being terrible? Figure something out. Change it up. You
trade him in the window. Maybe there's an MLS team that would love to have Lucho Acosta for their playoff.
I mean, clearly it's not working. So if you think that Acosta is the answer, then the coach isn't working. Change that. Whatever one it is you've decided as an organization is not working, change it.
First off, getting rid of Eric Quill scares the hell out of me, because then you begin to ask the question, who are they going to replace him with?
Yeah, who are you going to get?
I mean, seriously.
No one like a Curtin or Arena's got a job, but an Arena, none of those guys are going to come here and work for Sonata. The only way those guys would come here is if they get all the authority. And that includes, by the way, in my opinion, they're not going to come here for Dan Hunt, because Dan Hunt is down the hallway and checks in every single day. And it's one of the most involved day after day after day owners in the league, if not the most involved day after day after day. He wants to get in there. He wants to be involved. He wants to be part of the committee, right? So, like, even if they fired Zanata, would a Bruce Arena come here to work for Dan Hunt when Dan Hunt's going to be there looking over his shoulder all the time and watching what he's writing now? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they would. So who you're going to get is going to be the list of people that already work here. It's going to be Gall or Lucene or Michelle, you know, maybe somebody that used to play here. I don't know. You know, it'll be the same short list of names that we go over every year that everyone always says, why do you guys always pick those stupid names? Because that's who they hire, man. And it'll be the same thing if they change Quill. So I don't know that that is worth doing, honestly, after 6 months. I mean, what's be the point?
Oh, I would be 100% shocked if they fired Quill before the end of the season. In fact, I'll be shocked if they fire him at the end of the season.
I mean, the math says you're right, but at the same point, given the record at this point, I'd be like, okay, whatever, you know. I don't think it's a good idea to only give a guy 6 months investment in him as a coach before you can him, but they do lots of things I think are bad ideas, so a different bad idea wouldn't surprise me.
Well, I'm going to do two things. First off, Matt Doyle, who I don't necessarily want to make the barometer of the national media and his league recaps and rankings, put FC Dallas, not much fun, not much fight, not very good, which I think isn't off base.
Yeah.
But I also want to make sure I do what I said at the beginning of this, which I feel like part of our job is to kind of moderate everybody's misery in this, in that how do I say this without feeling I'm placating people? But this is a bad moment, but that the team isn't really that far out of potentially a playoff position. It's not like they're out of the playoffs. They could still... It's easier to make the playoffs than not make the playoffs, and so that could still happen this season. They just need a couple of things to go their way in terms of healthy players and just kind of getting some of the connections to click more consistently with the ball.
Yeah. I mean, when Eric Gueye is back, and if he can stay healthy, you know, that really will do wonders for the defense. Shaq Moore looks better. Farfan looks better. Everybody looks better. Ibiaga looks better when that guy's in there. Now, granted, we want two center backs like that, but we'll take one. You know, if Ramiro can and Kai can put together some sort of midfield working six situation that is on top of itself. If Delgado can play like when good Delgado, not bad Delgado, you're never sure when you're going to get game to game, but when you get the good one, it's pretty good. You know, if Paxton Miracle gets his knee back together and actually shows up and plays, that'd be great. You know, if the new wing that's coming is any good, I still think they're going to add two or three more pieces in this window. So,
All right, I'm going to ask you both this, but I'm going to ask Dan first. Dan, if everybody's healthy on this current roster, and you can pick from any of the current roster, what is your starting 11 and the formation they play? He's so mad at me for asking him this question first. Look at him.
Yeah.
Spell Aborigine. Aborigine.
No.
He looks like he's like he's trying to a spelling bee.
Obviously, there's always that lean towards a 4-2-3-1 with just about everything. Key part for me is always going to be midfield. You don't have a single pivot option, even if everyone's fit. You know, it is a Kayik plus, you know, whether it's defensively having Ramiro's experience, whether it's having Leggett's passing range, Paxton Pomacol's passing range. No matter what, you're a bit limited by your midfield options. You've obviously only got one real wing in the team. Bernie hasn't been doing a ton. Pedrinho is such an odd individual. His game suits certain opposition, certain games. Other games he might as well be playing USL League 2. Pars. Your centre-backs, Irigide and probably Lalas, honestly, at this point. Farfan, as horrendous as he's been this year, he's your best left-back. Nolan's not really got the pace for it, as good as his passing range is, as good as he's played at times. Shaq Moore is obviously probably one of the few names in pen, and that's not a wonderful option. Anderson Julio on the on one wing, on the other, I don't even know who you'd go for. Lucho, you know, whether or not he gels with that team, having him in a best 11 would make sense just for his individual talent that can pull a rabbit out of his arse occasionally, and obviously put a Musa up front.
Okay.
Does that answer?
It does. It's a fast. I mean, I do find it very interesting because amongst this roster, it's hard to kind of figure out how you, even when you've got all the pieces, it's hard to go, wait, how do all these pieces in the ideal situation work together based on what we know now halfway through the season?
I think one thing is for years and years, we've been blessed with this like wonderful start to the season where you get to see the best 11 healthy and then and some tweaks to the formation, to this, the style, to the selection itself. We haven't had that. It's just been bad.
Well, maybe that's the point. Buzz, you got a different answer?
Yes, I do. If it's me making these decisions, I don't think that this team can compete for at the top of the table, like compete for a championship for two or three seasons of development, given the way that it does business. They can't just buy their way to the top. The only way they're going to get there is if they develop some players. So forget about trying to make the playoffs this season. Who cares? You need to pick out the three or four kids that you think are really important, and you need to try and play them as much as possible. Nolan needs to play as much as possible. Whichever position you think is his position, you need to play him a bunch. You need to try and get Diego Garcia in as much as possible. You need to pick out whatever the next couple of guys coming along are. Now, maybe they can't start right now, but Kayik needs to play as much as possible. You paid $4 million for him, right? You need to, like, if Newman hadn't blown his knee out, I would say play him every game over Shaq Moore. Like, you need to develop something in the neighborhood of four or five legit top line MLS talents out of your pool of kids. You need your next generation of Tanner, Paxton, Jesus, Pepe. You need to find that generation. That's the only way you're going to win a championship with this club, with this team, the way it does business now. So you forget this season, play those guys, Diego Garcia's, maybe even play more Bernie. I don't think Bernie's got it, but play more Bernie. You know what I mean? Like, you have to keep the guys that you, and this means dumping Acosta. You keep the guys that are under the age of 30. You probably dump Legette. You know, you keep the guys that like can hang around for a 2 or 3 year cycle. So that's, if he'll do it, that's Musa. That's Irigide. That's Paz. You know, maybe it's Shaq Moore, but I'm not a big believer in the defensive qualities of his game. You know, I just don't think that sitting around and playing a bunch of vets and scraping your way into the ninth place does jack shit for you in terms of actually winning anything.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
I know we're kind of talking best 11 right now, but man, keyboard dump in the offseason is going to be epic.
Could be legit. That's a ways away, though.
It's just going to be dump.
Yeah, Buzz, I like your answer because it's a very honest and like reality check answer. Mm-hmm. But work with me here just under a hypothetical.
Okay.
The team, you know, look, they didn't go out and get Urguide and Lucho Acosta and Julio Anderson and Shaq Moore.
So
and,
give you a play for now?
Yeah, like, I mean, yep. Let's say, look, they're only however many points out of a playoff spot, and okay, that's the goal. You got all your players. Who are you starting, and what formation are you playing?
Okay, so if you're going to maximize this season, and I'm talking about just purely talent-wise, I'm not talking about some crazy other stuff that we don't know about. I'm just talking about talent. That means maximizing Lucho Acosta. In order to do that, I think you need to play 3-5-2. So in this window, you go out, you get another center back, and you start Oz and this new center back and probably Alvaro because of his ranginess. So you would have, I don't know what kind of your third player you'd get was. I mean, if you have to, you go with Ibiaga, that's fine. But you would have Oz and Alvaro, both who's rangy as hell. They could cover sideline to sideline. Shaq Moore would make a perfectly functional wing back on the right. Leibmanck on the left would be a problem. You'd have to go with some sort of mix of, you know, Farfan or Bernie or something and try and figure something out there, or try something really weird, like maybe like a guy that's really rangy, like a Delgado who could get up and down or something like that. Because Delgado can really move and cover ground when he is of the mind. And if you're asking him to play wing back, he might be able to actually do it out there on that side. And then you would have Lucho as your 10, and you'd have your double pivot, you know, which would be Kaique and probably Ramiro, but you could probably do Kaique and something like Legette actually as a, you know, your double pivot, your windshield wipers in front of your back three, you know, because you would have, as I said, you would have Shaq Moore out wide and probably Delgado maybe is my best thought at this moment on the left. And then you could have Musa and Anderson Julio up top as your two strikers with Acosta behind them. And you could bring in Logan Farrington for one of those guys or the other one whenever you needed a break or, you know, or something like that. So to me, that's the way you maximize the current run with Lucho Acosta, because that way Lucho's in that triangle. But then because you have a double behind them in a 3-5-2 and the two wide players, you have a solid four behind Lucho, and it won't matter that he doesn't have enough defense. You know, so I think that's the way I would try and do it if I thought that was really important. But, you know, that's not my choice. That's the hand I'm forced if I have to try and make the playoffs this year, is play that way. Because that's the only way I can think of to make Acosta work.
Okay.
God, well, I have PTSD from a back three.
I know. It really would be incumbent on getting another center back in the window.
Yeah.
You know, but
they went out and got another guy that's at least somewhere in the ballpark of Urguide. I think you'd feel a lot better about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But man, I mean, who's got a lot of faith in that? All right. Speaking of that, there is word that there is a player incoming. Of course, Inter Miami is out there talking about getting an Argentinian international World Cup winner to add to their collection. Dallas is shopping around in the Danish second division.
Proving my point, by the way, about the way they do business now, not winning a title.
Don Dietzen Lucius, a Haitian player who is playing for Odinense in the second.
I think Dietzen is his last name.
Well, I was looking at different things. And I think Lucius may be a nickname.
Oh, okay.
At the Gold Cup, they just called him Don Lucius.
There you go.
Oh, okay. So maybe Lucius is his last name and Dietzen is his middle. Who knows? So
who knows?
Anyway, so Don Dietzen Lucius. And I think he scored against the United States in that Gold Cup game.
In Arlington, yeah.
In Arlington. And it was a game so boring, I don't even remember it. And I was there in person.
Yeah, we joked that they signed him because Dan was at the game and saw him.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That sounds like that's totally plausible.
I know.
He's a winger. I mean, you know, lefty. So let's compare and contrast the second Danish division to the Israeli first division. Go. It's just like, this is, it's like, okay, now we got another guy. I mean, I don't like judging players before we actually see them, but.
Well, I said to somebody the other day that, or I think it was today on Twitter, that said, what can you tell them about it? I said, look, everybody that Dallas is willing to sign comes with a red flag. There's always something, right? They're from the second division. Oz is from the French second division. Look how great he is. So, like, it's just Dana's second division alone doesn't bother me that much. You find guys sometimes in places like this, but it's always just some guy you've never heard of because he scored for Haiti against the United States, so they've signed him, or he played in the second division. You know, it's like, it's never a slam dunk. Like, we're getting Aaron Long. Fantastic. Great signing. You know what I mean? It's never like, even like Petr Musa, where you're like, he doesn't start for the team he's with. Was it Benfica? Well, he doesn't start for Benfica. Why would you want that guy? But he's been pretty solid. So, you know, it's never a slam dunk. So I'm going to try and reserve until we see him. You know, how's he going to look? At least he's a left-footed guy. That has value over being a right-footed guy because it's more rare, obviously. So, like, you'll be able to flip-flop him size, whether you want to go a guy cutting in into his good foot or crossing, you know, whatever you want to do. So.
Well, since going over to the Danish leagues, he's played on two teams, started in 2019. He's played in 135 games and hit 35 goals or 34 goals.
So. Apparently a U.S. citizen, by the way, which is not.
Yeah, he does have U.S. citizenship, which obviously is a bonus as well, because he doesn't take up an international slot and probably helps avoid any of the Haitian immigration, whatever that is at the airport you got to go through, customs stuff you got to go through.
He's 24 years old. That's like that. You know, they give him his Leo Chu's replacement, basically, you know. And my understanding was that he traveled into the States today, that he got here today. So hopefully he's going to clear his physical in the next day or two, and then we'll see the signing announced. You know, they can't, if he was under contract, they won't actually be able to add him until the window, which is the 24th, so 10 more days. But the timing's about right for him to come in and, you know, he'll have to leave to get, no, he doesn't need a visa. Never mind.
No, he doesn't need
a visa. He can walk right in and play. Yeah. So, you know, you can bring him in and let him run around a bit, you know, get him ready. So
I do think the since this is the beginning of the window, and we talked about last week about giving them this window to kind of, before we really begin to judge how this season is going to play out, there is a level of, we've talked about this, like a demonstration of ambition. And this is one of those deals where you could understand why Dallas fans or fans of the club look at this and go, okay, this really, I mean, this doesn't, you're replacing Leo Chu, who was a total nothing for this club. We got to talk about that introduction video from the Portuguese team he's going to, by
the
way.
With the too small hat. Yeah.
That seems like a lot of effort for probably what's going to end up being very little in return. But anyway, I think this is the other problem with the club at this particular moment, is that it's these types of signings they've been making over the last few years that just signal so little ambition.
Yep. They're constantly looking for a buy low, sell high. It's always, their choice to always get guys that are undervalued so that they can play them and then have them be overvalued.
Well, they didn't. Okay. But I also want to say they did go out and get Petr Musa. They spent a lot of money to get Petr Musa. That was a lot of money.
Sure. But I bet if you look at him though, you'd think, oh, he wasn't starting for his club. Bring him here. He's going to start for his club. We think we can flip him quick if we possibly,
oh,
you know.
Yeah, no doubt.
I guarantee you that was part of the thought process. At
1000%, this is a club that is built on bringing players in that they can sell at a profit.
But well, let's not there's forget a difference the between partnership part.
Yes. But don't, I mean, but spending $10 million is still spending $10 million. That's spending fair. $5 million to get Lucho Acosta, whatever. Do we know what they spent to get Urigide?
I mean, the word was like $4 million.
Right? Okay. And they spent $4 million to go get Kaique.
Yes.
I don't know why, but they did. So we got to still give them credit for it. Doesn't mean it would make sense, but they did. So it's not like my point being is, it's not like they don't make money spending signings. It's just that the signings they make are not ones that necessarily spin in anybody's head. Musa did. We all were pretty impressed by the Musa signing. The Lucho Acosta signing at the time seemed like a no-brainer. And it was a no-win situation, because even if we at the time could have predicted this is how it would have turned out, there's no way you don't sign Lucho Acosta if he's available to you when you're already talking about being a wooden spoon team.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. It would be.
But then again, now the team is in this situation and playing poorly. You go out and get a guy from the Danish second division as a winger, and I still don't think that's going to light anybody's hair on fire.
Irigide was $2.5 million.
Does that make any sense, guys?
Yeah, I agree with you. No. I'm not in agreement. I have anything to say. It's an audio show. I should say yes. You're totally correct, Peter. Yeah, I 100% agree with what you said there.
All right.
One thing. I mean, it doesn't necessarily change anything, but you know, he was playing first division. OB got relegated. They then immediately won the league. So I mean, calling him a second division Danish player is, you know, half the story, I guess.
Okay, fair enough.
But still, not the most inspiring league anyway.
He does have 8 goals and 22 caps for Haiti, which is not nothing.
Do we know how much they're spending to get him?
The report said 1 million base with up to 4 million in incentive euros. In this modern market, like 1 million for a winger is not very much money. So, you know, 4 million is obviously what they're willing to pay these days if they think they really got something.
Well, we'll have to go see if anybody has been watching the Danish league in the last few years that could report back on.
Well, Armand's put a couple of things in Discord that people in Denmark are laughing that FC Dallas would pay a penny for him. So that's encouraging.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, okay. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. Like, I always feel bad prejudging a guy, although it's fun. Sometimes they show up and they kick ass. We were all very, very concerned about the qualities of Irigide, and now we all can't. We all can't push ourselves out of the way to go over and say, you know, shake the dude's hand. So, you know, it's a bad situation all the way around in terms of the season. And I don't know how it gets better. And I feel bad because I felt like the whole point of this was to lift everybody's spirits, but we're not doing a very good job.
Well, honestly, I don't know that there's a lot to lift you with right now. You know, we need to see some actions.
Well, everybody can go get their kick-ass Dallas Burn third jersey this week.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
The one good thing.
I'm gonna go ahead and throw the Hail Mary of Kit Talk right here. Just
it's not gonna drive anyone off. It's the only good thing.
Yeah. All right. So Dan, why don't you fill everybody in on what the latest is about the new shirt, when they can get it, and any of the new details that you may have acquired about it.
Yes, so goes on sale on Wednesday. I believe Team Store opens at 10. It'll be soccer 90, since the actual Team Store, I think, is only during game days now. There'll be a replica version, an authentic version. For full disclosure, I went up to Frisco in the week and sat down with Tim Henning, the VP of merchandising, for a story that will come out after the jersey is released. But the best part of it is I got to see it up close. I got to touch it. And the photos don't do it any justice. It is stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's your favorite feature about it?
It's stupid. But the Burn word mark on the front is in this like 3D print vinyl that mimics the way that sponsors and word marks on jerseys used to be in that kind of foam felt stuff, the 3D
flocked
stuff. That,
yeah. Style,
yeah, exactly. You know, the stuff that you put it in the washing machine and it came out covered in lint. but yeah, it's a really nice 3D detail. The logos are embroidered. They are also like they're in a 3D style, kind of like how baseball caps are sometimes, with that real 3D embroidery where they put the little foam tube in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. I think it's just stunning. And best of all, that is 100% wasabi.
Nice.
Whoa. So they did go with the green and not yellow or gold or anything like that.
Yeah, it is. I think they're calling it gold, but it's green. It's true wasabi.
Well, you know, it's funny. Back in the 98 jersey, Everybody, I see, this is how I remember this now from back in the day, was that when that shirt came out, it was gold. But if you look at that shirt in person, you can tell, I mean, it's almost hard to tell if Nike at the time just couldn't print that green on that color at the time. And it looks gold, but it's supposed to be the asparagus, wasabi, guacamole green. And it just didn't turn out that way. So to find out that this is actually, you can look at it and go, okay, this is the green from the original jerseys. That is amazingly exciting news.
There is actually a little bit of gold on the jersey, on the Burn logo. So you can definitely see a contrast to it. But yeah, it's stunning. It's amazing. It's
do we know what the prices for the two versions are going to be?
I think it's like 90 for the replica, and the authentics run at like 135, something around there.
Crackers. Does the authentic come with patches and everything on it?
The one I saw did not.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's usually add-ons at Soccer 90 if you want them.
Is the ad at the bottom of the back of the shirt?
It's children's, yeah.
Okay, children's. Interesting.
In wasabi.
And is the back of the shirt just straight black? It doesn't have the lines on it, does it?
I think so, yeah. I think it was just plain. I spent an hour sitting there staring at it with Google eyes, and I forgot that part.
Went into a trance and seems to...
Oh, honestly, yeah. It's funny because I'm like, you know, I'm sitting having this conversation, but I'm like making next to no eye contact because I'm just staring directly at this jersey like, oh my God, it's like 6 inches from my face. This is amazing. But yeah,
you stick it in your pants pocket and run out. You try to
only,
lift it.
If only, no, it wouldn't have been my size anyway. But no, I think everyone is going to love it. If you don't, what the hell is wrong with you? So they'll release it on Wednesday. I heard that there may be a pop-up merch situation at FC Dallas's watch party for the San Jose game on Wednesday that may sell the jersey. I've also heard someone say that it might not sell the jersey. And then they'll obviously wear it on the 19th for the 90s night, where they'll have Dodd, Kassar, Kreis, Sarko,
Weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then, yeah, after it's released, I still need to write it, but we'll have kind of a bit of kit nerd in talking about the story behind the jersey, the whole process, all that fun stuff. So thank you to FC Dallas and to Tim for being so nice as to sit down with us and have a little chat about some kit nerding.
All right. Well, that would then lead us to the games coming up, and which would be San Jose next, Buzz. We remember the last time we played San Jose, so...
Yeah,
and you don't have Lucho Acosta because he got himself suspended again.
Yeah, the no Lucho Acosta. So, like, for me, I think this is a point where you kind of want to be a little more aggressive and try something. Not like against LAFC, they rolled out the same tactic, you know, assuming that Acosta would be back, right? So we're going to – well, now you don't have him, so and you got crushed. So let's try something a little different. So, number one, can Oz – your Gide play or not? I mean, that's a pretty cut and dry question. If he can play, he's playing. By play, I mean start. Excuse me. If you think he can start, he's starting. You know, but there's always the thing where he's coming back from the hamstring. You don't want to blow it out again. So I would have liked to have seen him get off the bench against LAFC, and he didn't. So maybe this one, you bring him off the bench. So whichever way you slice it, it's either Irigide and Ibiaga, or it's Ibiaga and Abubakar in the center backs. You know, honestly, Norris was out this weekend, so he's not going to come in and start at left back, even if he gets cleared for this game. Moore's in the right back. It's like, see, there's no choices in a lot of these places. There's no decisions to be made. Paz is playing. So where I think you have to, maybe you want to think about getting aggressive, go ahead and play 4-2-3-1. You know, play Kaik and Delgado. Move Legette up into the 10 role. Go with... You know, you're not going to have Anderson Julio probably, so go with Farrington, go with Bernie, you know, do something. Don't just roll out the exact same thing, that same, you know, fake diamond we've been seeing him play, that same mechanic built around Acosta without Acosta. because if you do that, you're just accepting the status quo, you know? And if you're Quill, what do you have to lose, right? I mean, do something, right? So try it, you know? If you don't have the center backs to try three, and maybe you don't want to try three when you don't have a cuss anyway. So shake it up, man. Try something different. Try and get your boy Bernie on the field, you know? Get a double pivot going. Put Legette high up the field where he can really smoke. Or if you like him deeper, Delgado's a 10, put him up there. You know, try something and see if you can get this thing to shake loose or change or wake everybody up. I think it's time for him to do something. I think that's the most logical thing is to go with the tactic you actually want to play, you know, put some guys in a chance, into a spot where they maybe could try and shine, see if some people will wake up and play for you. Because if you roll out that same mentality, that same tactic, that same flatness that you did at LAFC, you're just going to get steamrolled again, you know, and what's the point at that point?
So does the fact that this is a road game and then they've got their home game against last place St. Louis coming up in 3 days later, does that change anything for you?
I mean, no, what have you got to lose? I mean, you're going to come home, but that helps you anyway. Usually you're better on the road anyway. So why not, you know, add some spice to the thing and try and shake everybody a little bit and wake them up a little bit, you know, get them going, you know.
Yeah.
Try and get some electricity, some vibe, some like, man, at least we're trying something. At least we're changing it up. You know what I mean? I don't, you know, at some point, if you just, what's the definition of madness, right? Repeating the same exercise, expecting it to change. So don't just go with the same old thing, you know. And I don't know what Cole's going to do. I got no idea. But that's what I would do, I would think. I think I'd try and wake my team up when they looked like they were asleep last game, you know.
Well, I feel like I have failed in my goal of lifting up the curious from their morbid state of depression that I've been seeing in various and sundry online places. So my apologies. I thought I would do a better job of that, but I failed.
You know, the things that could uplift this team a little bit are guys coming back from injury. And so you kind of just have to wait for that to happen.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that's the, you know, you're getting me back, Paxton, if that ever happens, you know, I mean, that honestly is what needs to, Anderson, Julio, you know, those guys will all help. So
it's been a bad week. Maybe yeah. It'll get better next week.
Maybe
the shirt's coming out. That alone will make it a better week. So the hits keep coming. North Texas played a game they lost this week.
They got played off the field like 3-0 to Houston Dynamo. They down in Houston. They get smoked by that team a lot down there. It's a tough place to play as a rivalry game. Dallas, North Texas SC is playing a lot of kids these days. They don't have a lot of guys coming down from the first team. You know, they're even some of their guys that are up, like Torcado's up with the first team. Sarver was up with the first team. You know, so it's not.
Where does Houston 2 play their games?
At the training complex that they have, there's a little stadium that belongs, I think technically belongs to like a
it's the rugby team.
Yeah, uh-huh. They play in that little stadium there, which is at the Dynamo training facility. It's a decent little complex. You know, it's like, it's a lot. So like,
do you know where in Houston Toyota. It is?
South near Pearland.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Wow. You know, okay.
Yeah. It's not inside town. It's, you know, it's way out. You know, it's like Toyota Soccer Center, except there's no stadium there, no big stadium. It's a small stadium. So,
all right. We don't have any Atletico news other than out there trying to win hearts and minds. So good on them. Texoma's unbeaten run ended against the kind Portland. Of cool kids, Portland's.
Yeah.
Hearts of Portland or Hearts of Maine? Parts of Maine, yeah.
Hearts of Pine or, yeah.
Oh, wait, Hearts of, yeah.
Portland, Maine, but yeah, Hearts of Pine.
It's one of those things.
Yeah, they scored like 5 minutes into the game and then held on. Texoma controlled a lot of the play.
Was that the game that didn't start till like 11:30 that night because of the storm?
Yeah, like a 3-hour delay for weather, and then they played it like way late at night. And Texoma, by reports, all controlled the game but was not able to get a goal and lost 1-0. I was glad to see them re-sign Bram Padilla. That was really nice. We've talked about him a bunch, former academy guy who had, you know, damn near a Paxton Pomegranate level talent that has just got hurt way too many times over his college career.
Yep. Speaking of kit talk, I'm sure all three of us are aware of the fantastic reveal for Madison Forward's new third kit, which is the Scottish tartan kit.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
So I just want to give them special credit for putting the design focus in the shorts and not the shirt. I think that's a really cool spin on that. That really sets that apart. I mean, it's borderline obnoxious and gross, but it's just it. All of it comes together with the color they picked for the shirt to go along with the pattern in the shorts that makes it look like a kilt.
Yeah.
And the killer edition is the green socks, by the way. That's the best part of that kit in many ways. Dan,
it's
you
really
got
good.
You got hot sports opinions on that kit?
No. I mean, it's a solid gimmick kit. I think they've done a great job, as they always do. Got to see him last week against Texoma, and you know, they, even those little pink and blue home jerseys they've got, even their goalkeeper kit, this like orange stripe number. It's just, they do it all so well.
Yeah.
Just not like the play on the pitch this season. They kind of shit.
Kind of like Oakland Roots. Just absolutely not a good soccer team, but man, those Charlie kits are really sweet.
Kind of like FC Dallas released this really cool burn jersey. Dog shit.
Fair. Totally fair.
Are we all going to have a different opinion of this new third shirt if they
absolutely get
trucked
good,
by St. Louis at home on Saturday?
This kit is phenomenal.
It's so good. We don't care if they lose
7-0.
I mean,
if you dinged a Ferrari, would you still want a Ferrari?
That's a good analogy. All right. Very good. Let's see. What else we got on the run sheet here? Dallas Trinity has started to make some moves, because that new Dallas Trinity season's right around the corner, kids. Don't look now. What? How many weeks away?
6 weeks.
Yeah, they opened camp today.
Good Lord. And they've made some signings, guys?
Seven
signings. Wow. Okay. Anybody of note?
Yes. I mean, obviously their MO is super local, so they have absolutely stuck with that to a degree. Sami Guidry, a left back out of the FC Dallas youth system, really, really highly rated. A lot of US youth camps. She went to the under-17s, under-20 World Cups, playing with the likes of Trinity Byers, Jaden Shaw, and Sam Mazur. She went to Virginia, played 96 appearances there. This is going to be her first pro season, so very exciting for anyone that's even, you know, seen the social media posts from FC Dallas Youth over the years. Maya McCutcheon was also part of the ECNL national title winning team with Guidry. She went to Oklahoma and West Virginia. Actually, she signed briefly for North Carolina Courage as an injury replacement, didn't play. Went off to the A-League Women, Australia, technically New Zealand, because she played for Wellington Phoenix. Just finished up there. She, in her first professional season, she missed all of 36 minutes of a 23-game season. So hopefully going to be one of the ones that we don't have the repeat of what we've seen this year, where, or this past season, where players are, you know, really getting a hard first test in their professional career. She is a center, defensive midfielder. She's a six. Who else? We've just got the Caroline Swans signed as an academy player. She is the sister of Caleb Swan on North Texas SC. She is captain of the Solar SC 09s. She won the Golden Boar as captain of the U.S. U15 team at the CONCACAF Championship. She's just moved up to the U16, so be very exciting to see her. Very much like Celie Strawn last year. I think she's a center mid, plays a little bit more on the attacking side.
If I can jump in on Swan real fast, she's the one that played boys ECNL up to U15. So she's an absolutely phenomenal ball of a player.
Two more semi-local links. Today or yesterday, they just announced Winnie Bellata. She's an attacking midfielder, signed from Spokane. Canadian, 24 years old, played 10 games up for Zephyr. Her tie is she was at SMU. Caroline Kelly, a striker signed from Brooklyn FC, went to TCU, 23 years old from around Kansas City, had two goals in 300 minutes in that complete shit show of a season of Brooklyn FC. Then you have, let's see, you had Kylie Delaney, another forward. Forward, but she's also played a lot of centre-back and full-back. So a real good utility player out of Arkansas. She was with Washington Spirit. Again, injury replacement. She did make one appearance in NWSL. 9 goals, 12 assists in 78 games for Arkansas Razorbacks. So, yes, she can score and assist. And then the last one is probably the most intriguing. I don't know if you've heard of Riley Foster, the Canadian goalkeeper who got in a car crash. Probably should have died because she got ejected out the windshield, broke her neck in 7 places. Or sorry, broke her spine in 7 places, her neck in 5 places, 2 more in the back. Shoulder injury that required surgery, partially torn MCL, quadricep, and a brain bleed. She was told that she would never regain mobility, and she returned to play professional soccer. So she is now a Dallas Trinity player, and probably, realistically, first-choice keeper. She was with Liverpool. She recovered, I think signed with Everton very briefly, moved on to Durham in the Women's Championship in England, and then, yeah, now she's... Now she's come into to Dallas. We have a very cool story.
That is quite a story. They should write a press release about it.
Yeah.
137,000 times.
She should do a Ryan Hollingshead thing. Meet up. Meet and greet.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. We've always made fun of FC Dallas kind of pushing overly pushing the general interest stuff. Between Riley Foster's... car accident in Finland, which weirdly came a couple of days after winning a penalty shootout in the League Cup for Liverpool. Just as she was starting to break into the first team there in her first season as a professional. I think she made a She Believes Cup squad for Canada too. But between that, you've also got Choma Ubagu. Dallas Trinity was her first club after battling cancer as well. So you've got a couple of very inspiring comeback stories.
Buzz, I love it that Dan comes to life when we start talking women's soccer.
He knows his
term. I thought you were going to say human tragedy.
Or that.
No, that's a great story, man. I'm excited to see her how she is on the field. You know, see her back in action. That'd be cool.
She won't be afraid to throw herself in there, will she?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I mean, if you Google it, there's a lot of photos. Like they had her in the whole neck halo thing for, significant amount of time. So, especially playing in goal, right? You're throwing yourself around into the ground. You're throwing yourself out at people at corners to punch the ball away. I think that's just
unless
unreal.
You're Martin Paz.
He punched the ball away from a corner a few weeks ago.
Let's see. What else?
One other women's soccer thing. Deb Abadoun is at the Women's African Cup of Nations. Started the first 2 games for Nigeria. They won their group. She was arrested for the third group game. But Dallas Trinity kind of doing some international stuff is always cool.
Didn't she just extend her deal or something so her loan continues? Or am I
thinking she is on loan until the end of 2025 from Washington Spirit. So is Tamara Bolt. Tamara Bolt was up for a contract extension, which they exercised. So she will stay with Dallas Trinity as a loanee.
Great. Good. Good player.
That's a lot. Very good. All right. Well, I think we've destroyed this about as best we can.
Come on. That was good.
Was it?
I mean, it's all dark about FC Dallas, but, you know.
Hey, what's happening in Mansfield right now?
You know, it's funny. Tramel, the kid that has been producing the kicker, producing and board hopping for us the last few weeks, he actually brought up the fact that the new stadium is being built like walking distance from where he lives, and he's super excited about it.
Yeah, the Mansfield, the city put out some, or the Parks Department put out some pictures of the construction progress. So it's coming along. They're going to be, you know, they're supposed to be ready for next season for North Texas Soccer Club, a little further away from my house, unfortunately. But cool to see them get the venue. Hopefully it's a good venue. Hopefully it's a good training field. FC Dallas needs some.
Is it 5,000 seats?
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay. Not a big
deal. Sorry. It's not more than 10 for sure. It might be 5 to 10. Probably more like 5.
Yeah, I would be shocked if it was 10.
Yeah, I don't think it's 10. I think it's 5. But you asked me that without thinking. I didn't look.
All right, guys. I think we did our best. Considering the circumstances and what's going on and the vibe and the week that it's been, I truly think we've done our best work as we possibly can. Not our best work in the giant scheme of things, but as can be expected for the situation. I'm just going with that.
That's fair, I think. I mean, you know, it's hard to be positive when you get a performance like that, you know. And I think that if you've made it this far in the season, you're going to be a fan. And why would you drop out now? I mean, if you got this far, I'm sure you'll stick around.
Yes, true. Okay. Well, Dan, thank you very much, sir. Glad to have you back.
Likewise. And I think we actually had some live soccer this evening. Denton Diablos, would you host McKinney over the weekend? And the Storms kind of put paid to their game, but allegedly they are something stupid like 8-0 up over McKinney.
Oh, wow.
The FC Dallas U23 team, which plays at that same level, won their league, and they've advanced now to the regional final. I think it is. I can't remember who they're playing, but it'll come up like next week. That's the team that's made up of all the kids in college. It's coached by Zach Lloyd.
Ah, that's the League of Clubs thing?
Clubs team. They've been smashing everybody they're playing. It's a really good team. I mean, there's 4, 5, 6 guys on that team that'll be on the, you know, my college watch list this fall and have potential to be homegrowns, college homegrowns in the next couple of years. So, you know, if you are into that bag, that's definitely worth watching if you get a chance to watch their whatever the regional final is called.
All right.
So my man Diego Hernandez is boss of that team. So I love it.
All right. Dan, thank you, sir.
Thank you. And it finished 11-0.
Holy crap. Okay.
Wow.
I'm going to predict there will be some tweeting about that happening tonight from one club to the other. Buzz, I don't know where you are. I know you're on your walkabout somewhere in the West Coast.
Right this second, I'm in Spokane, Washington. But the lake is Lake Coeur d'Alene.
Oh, are you picking up another player for Trinity?
That could be. Bring one back.
Bring her back.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you have a good, fun vacation.
Thanks, man.
And we will speak to you next week. Thank you, FC. No. Excuse me. Let me start over. And thank you, DFW Soccer Curious Fan. You. We will speak to you next week in another episode of Third Degree, the podcast.
At least the kids come in.
Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast.